Hi, I'm Sean. I'm a compulsive overeater. Very grateful to a chance to talk to and especially listen to all of you folks. I have been in OA now for approximately 2.5 years, just about exactly 2.5 years. I've been lucky enough to, in program terminology, to have released about 75, 80 pounds at this point, and I'm currently still moving towards my goal weight. I have maintained my imperfect abstinence for the whole time that I've been. And just to give you a sense of where I was at when I went to my first meeting, I'll go back afterwards. But I had someone very close to me who has a our disease in another form, and we were really, really struggling. We both have health issues, and there were a lot of changes going in their lives, and those changes all seemed terrible. And both of our struggles were intermingling. And I would pretty much every morning, often at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, because what's open then is drive-through breakfast places. I've been a vegetarian since I was 9 years old, but bagels are still vegetarian. So are donuts. So are, eggs and cheese and hash browns and all the stuff you get there. I don't want to trigger people with a litany of description of food. But every single morning, or four out of, mornings a week, I would sneak out. Maybe it'd be because, oh, I have to go grab caffeine. Or maybe it'd be, I didn't get any sleep last night, so I need to have, I can't, I'm too tired to make breakfast, or whatever reason. But it was a different reason or the same reason every single day. And I would go to the one place, and I would order two drinks because I was gonna order two meals and two desserts. Then I went to the next fast food place and ordered two more breakfasts, two more drinks. I'd probably eaten the first on the way, and just trying to hide that bag of the first food, just still trying to make the people in the fast food, who were in the unfortunate position of being my unintentional dealers, just lying to them, trying to represent to them, like, in the drive-through willow window, like, no, you can't see this bag of stuff. You can't smell all the grease. You can't see that I've got food in my beard. You can't, because I'm in my car, so it's a magical space. Doesn't count. Nothing counts in there for eating. And just thanks. Maybe I might say, like, oh yeah, no. What were we supposed? What was I supposed to get for that person? Oh yeah, no, they want, that kind of thing. Maybe not, you haven't had that experience, but I imagine that you've had those types of experiences where you are just truly consumed by the food. It's the answer to every question you have, and your life seems like nothing but questions. So, the person close to me went into a step program for their disease and struggled and fought and continues to fight and has been sober for a few years now, and that's amazing. But I was still eating even as she was in program. I was still lying about food. I was still, when I was on campus at the school that I was in the process of dropping out of a PhD program, I would, between instructing seminars, I would go run, grab some food, hide. I knew all the places on campus to hide, to eat, because again, I didn't want students to see me, right? I'm still trying to represent, like, people can't know what is obvious. You know, I was 370 pounds at my heaviest. Like, people probably guess I was eating. And I lived my life consumed by shame the whole time, as though I was suffering from, you know, all this struggle to represent myself in a specific sort of way. And I was living in the guilt and shame the whole time. So I wasn't convincing anybody else, and I sure as hell wasn't convincing myself that things were okay. But I had become numbed, because that's what the food was for, was to numb me. And it has been for my entire life. So I entered into a step program to help folks who have people close to them with addictions. And after a couple months there, where I shared some things and cried and was scared, someone came up to me very gently, scared, I think, to have, you know, like, I don't want to offend this person. And said, had you ever heard of OA? Because I talked about breakfast. And I hadn't at that point. And so I knew that the STEP program was working for me. I knew that the STEP program was working for my partner. And I knew I couldn't stop eating. I just couldn't. And so I went to my first meeting. And it was me and two other people. But one of them was my friend. And I stayed. And I kept coming back. And I have kept up going to meetings for the entire time. And since I've been going to meetings, I have not ordered fast food once. I have not ordered a pizza. I have not bought a bag of candy. I have, you know, sometimes I'll put an extra slice of cheese on my sandwich. You know, sometimes I'll grab some crackers, but I have maintained my imperfect abstinence that time. And boy, howdy, I have not done it by myself. I was lucky enough that my friend fairly quickly became my sponsor. I wasn't ready to start the steps because I didn't know the depth of my problem at that point. So my sponsor instead worked with me reading the big book and just starting to teach me some of the tools that I use now that saved my life. Going to meetings being one, having a sponsor being another. I started having a meal plan, very basic one. It is regular. I know what I'm going to have pretty much every day, because that indecision moment, that's one where the anxiety comes up, the food anxiety, you know, where it's like, ooh, I have a choice of what to eat. Well, that means I can choose to get myself a goodie, right? So having that, developing with the food plan, you know, I write an email to my sponsor every morning, and I would write about how my day was going too. And, you know, and they would respond, and we'd get, you know, we'd have conversations. This person was truly becoming a really close friend of mine, as well as my sponsor. And then she said, you know, why don't we use action plans? And I had heard of them and the other end, a lot of the pamphlets and some literature. And I wasn't sure, because I was like, oh, I'm terrible at that. I'm just going to make this endless list, because I made notes and lists like do this scattered everywhere, you know, on my iPad, just all these ones like you got to make sure you never forget to do this and then never look at it again. The action plan isn't like that. If you've never done an action plan, what my action plan looks like is I say a couple things I'm going to do that day. And they can be, I need to make a very difficult call. They can be, I need to remember to get our windshield fixed. They can be, I need to use this day for rest. And it isn't a list of things that, all the things I could do, because that list is infinite. It's a list of stuff that I will do. If I say I'm going to do it, it's like, why wouldn't I call the windshield person? I already in an email said I was going to do it. So I'll do it. You know, it'll take me, at worst, it'll take me half an hour. Whatever, right? And maybe I'm scared because, oh no, what's the windshield? And it turns out it was covered. Who knew? That's wonderful. Thank you, Massachusetts. I got my windshield, you know? And that means that every day I get at least a couple just wins, a couple times during the day where I can say, yeah, I did what I said I was going to do. Win. It teaches me to be honest. It teaches me to bring my focus down to today. And it also, it just makes this level of consistency where you can start looking back and go like, oh yeah, I've been doing this now for 2 years and I did a lot more than I thought I would. Because the other secret about that is if you say you're going to do two things and you do those two things, you're probably going to do a third thing you needed to do. You know, you're not going to plan for it. It's just, oh yeah, I guess I can just do this. I've got a second. And that's transformative. It's amazing how pushing an inch on a sober mind can get you a mile, you know? It really, really is. And the nice thing too is it doesn't just mean that in the good times you can mark your progress, right? I'm currently broadcasting live from my in-laws' basement, which is always a fun thing for someone who just turned 40 to say, because we had an apartment fire several months ago and we had to leave our place. Thankfully, we were both okay. Our possessions were okay. But we don't know when we're going to have our home again. You know, we'd lost some important things, including some medical things. And our lives are very different. It's a massive stress. COVID, the fear of that. All of these things, that they're terrible. Illnesses, surgeries, emergencies, families. Everybody, the craziness, where it's like we never feel like we progress. Well, if my action plan is I'm going to talk to my mom today and I'm going to set this boundary and I do it, that's a huge win. And that's a win that lasts for a long time. So anyways, I love action plans. I can go off on those forever, obviously. And in doing those things, it started me moving towards the steps. And, you know, and we started doing step work. But, you know, it really started me doing true step work was someone asked me to help them with the first 12 days. I don't know if folks are familiar with the first 12 days. They are an organized way of going through this pamphlet called Where Do I Start, which describes the OA program. And they are a way for people to learn how to sponsor and for people to learn how they start doing steps. Every couple days, it's not a do it in 12 days type thing. You know, the one person will get a question and a little writing thing. And all of a sudden, after a month, they'll have written, you know, 12 days at least, probably more. They've met with somebody, talked with somebody one-on-one about things that they've never talked about before, started to think about questions of where they're at, why they're there, and what they can do to get help. And doing that has transformed my life again. If the OA program has saved my life, then doing service. I also do some stuff at the intergroup level now. My sponsor is one of the people who's done stuff all the way up to, you know, world service. But just doing little help things. And it started, honestly, putting out the books at a meeting, you know, or here, trying to read the format for a Zoom meeting for the first time. Because everybody who's led a Zoom meeting has read one of the scripts for the first time. It's not like it's natural coming out of people's mouths. But doing it teaches you that you can. And it teaches you that you can learn how to listen better and learn how to perform service and get utility out of bits of your life that you thought you never could. Because that's the real secret of the program for me, is the way that it transforms the hardest parts of your life into the parts that can help other people the most. So I'm going to describe some of my childhood was okay. Both my parents worked an awful lot. There was a lot of yelling and, you know, some violence in the home. We traveled a lot. My folks were both immigrants to Canada. I grew up in outside of Calgary in a very small town, less than 500 people. We skied constantly. That was just our life. My parents had their day jobs and then their ski instructor jobs to get us on the hill, which also meant that there was always parties and stuff around. And it also meant that my parents were away a lot, and I was in charge of my brother. I was,
gentle reminder, 5 minutes left.
Thanks. And I started making the simple foods that I still are comfort foods, you know, crackers and cheese, you know, sweets, all those types of things. You know, I realized that I thought I was fat. You know, grade one, I was sure I was fat because people were telling me I was fat. Grade two, I thought I was huge. I've looked at pictures. I thought I was short and really fat. And I just looked like another kid. But already at that point, I had completely lost how I look because I wanted to look like something else so bad. And I was trying to force myself to look like that. And I was also trying to force myself to look like what people were telling me I looked like, to follow their lead, because I was so unsure about who I was and how I could fix the things in my life, even as a small child. I have had very severe back problems. I had my first surgery when I was 18, after being told that I might not be able to walk anymore. Thankfully, it was successful, but as a result, I've had severe chronic pain for, you know, since I was 13, 14. So that's a part of my life. And I started realizing that even before that, I had prepared for it because I had learned to numb myself. I learned to numb myself from food. When we would go skiing, I was having panic attacks because they were all racing ahead of me. And I never thought I could do as good as them because I was too fat. I would numb myself. The cold didn't bother me. So I could ski in a t-shirt, shorts. I could practice football, you know, wearing a tank top when it was 20 below because I could numb myself. And I taught myself, instead of hurting all the time or hurting sometimes, I was going to ache all the time. I would just have that low level static of pain, and that would be my life. And I would define myself that way because now I was that. I was the invalid. I was a person who had mental disease, physical disease, neurological disease. I was the person who had addiction and I couldn't do anything about it. I was a person who couldn't talk to other people, couldn't have relationships, was always certain that I was boring everyone, wasting their time and ruining their life in order. And I don't feel that way anymore. And it's because every day I learn to look at myself with love, because I do little attainable things every day. They're things that remind me that I don't need to eat to connect to others. I don't need to eat to hide who I am from myself. I don't need to eat to numb myself, because I've got shit to do, you know? I have a history of self-harm. And I have depression, and sometimes my brain tells me to hurt myself. And for the first time in my life, I can tell that voice, no, I don't have time. I do not have time to want to hurt myself. I do not have time to want to kill myself. Because you know what? Today I said I was going to rest for 2 hours, and that's what I'm going to do. Today I said I was going to go to a meeting, and for that hour, I'm not going to eat, and I'm not going to worry about eating. All of you are giving me an hour of sobriety that I am so grateful for. I could never pay back. But I have learned that what I can do to contribute and feel useful is just to say who I am, say my story, share my experience, strength, and hope, and to listen. And then everything else comes from that. It works if you let it, and you deserve it. So work it. I'm done. I'm really, again, just thanks so much for the chance to speak. And I really am excited to hear folks' shares. So thanks.